Welcome to Bat Yard's Finest, bringing you the finest of Batman and Superman and whatever the hell else we want to talk about in pop culture. With me always is the gentleman in the center of the screen. That's when you introduce yourself, Matt.
Oh, sorry.
That's your cue.
Just message me. No. All of a sudden, I look down for 5 seconds. Hi, guys. I'm Matt. Sorry, being stupid.
All right. And we are
to this side.
Yeah. So,
I'm JT. I'm Josh's brother.
Yeah, so this is the first time we have a special guest today. Yeah, JT. Thanks for joining us. We've been talking for a while about JT coming on. We were originally going to start out with a Smallville thing, but we just never got around to it. That'll be in the future. We'll do another trio of us discussing all things Smallville. But today, we're discussing a completely different animal. We are discussing both cuts of Superman 2. And Matt, since you're so great at synopsis, I wanted to see your interpretation of Superman 2. Well, you can just talk about the regular cut. Okay? Just the regular theatrical cut before we get into the other stuff.
You son of a bitch.
Oh, wait, before we get into the meat and potatoes of everything, should we, is there any, like, BS you want to talk about? Anything that kind of comes to mind before we get into the, you know, the full course meal?
Not really. Not that I know of.
Yeah, I don't really have too much to say. There's a few things about this, the Snyder Cut I wanted to mention. That, what was it? It was just like little blips, but they'll come to me. JT, do you have anything you want to bring up before we just have this whole out discussion?
I saw my octopus teacher, which was today. I thought that was a good film. That's all I want to say.
That documentary on Netflix?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
So you should check it out.
Yeah, I watched half of it. It was pretty interesting. It's about this guy. He's in South Africa, right? Is that's where he is? Right?
I believe so. Yeah,
South Africa.
He had like a South African accent.
Yeah, and he was traveling. He travels in and out of the ocean to witness this one octopus, and he eventually gains its trust, and they become friends. And this is a actual documentary, so they got the undersea shots, and they're up close and personal with this mollusk, this octopus. So it's over the course of several years, he's going to the same spots viewing this octopus, right, Jay?
It takes place like about over the course of 1 year, because octopuses only live for about a year. But yeah, mm-hmm. He goes there every single day for a year. So he's there for about 80% of this octopus's life. And, it was an interesting – I thought it was interesting just seeing how octopuses live. It's they're different animals, you know.
They like to punch fish.
They chomp – they beak them to death.
No. They from my news that I know of octopus, they like to just randomly punch fish for no reason.
Yeah. Do they ball up their tentacle and just punch
them?
Like,
they kind of whip them. They just whip them. That's pretty cool. Yeah, it's like a
punch. It's a weird thing.
I
like to do it.
It happens in like a fraction of a second. They just go pop.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah, I watched half of it. I do have to finish it myself. I know it's on Netflix, right? That's where it is.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. It's okay. A critically acclaimed movie on Netflix. I think it was up for an Oscar, or nominated for an Oscar or something.
Really? I didn't know. Yeah. I guess there are Oscar. Documentaries are nominated for Oscars. Who knows what the hell the Oscars is going to do this year with, not too many, well, at least the last year's Oscars, the 2020 Oscars.
Yeah, COVID. It's crazy.
Since nothing was released. So I guess we'll go into the meat and potatoes of everything. I'll bring up what I have to say later. On during this discussion, because behind the scenes of Superman 2 and this Justice League film. They have some similarities, so they'll definitely be showcased throughout this discussion. So, Matt, since you're looking at your phone,
I'm hearing everything you're
saying.
Are
you ready?
Nick texted me.
Fuck Nick. Get him out of here. Don't even look at him. Okay? So, Matt, are you ready to do the synopsis of
Superman? Am I ever ready for anything?
Well, you're ready for this now.
Okay, so basically, this movie is slightly picking up from Superman 2 in a somewhat sorts of way, because they like to do, in the beginning of the movie, they like to do a big, what is it, just a repeat of what's up, like catch up for you,
like a recap
for you in the beginning to get you the point of what's happening and what's going to happen in the movie. What's happening with this. So General Zod and his group of people get banished into the Phantom Zone. So they're just floating in this freaking crystal thing throughout space. The only way you can unlock it is by blowing it up, and they do that in the fucking first movie. And later on, you get to see, Lois, they bring you down to Metropolis, and Lois and Clark are working together. They end up going onto a case, a news case that's in Niagara Falls, and they're going to do this whole, news story. But in the midst of that, Lois has a thought that he kind of looks like Superman, so it's going to have, she has this, thought going on in process. And meanwhile, Lex Luthor escapes from jail and finds Superman's Fortress of Solitude and ends up deciding to look around, figure out things, and activates Fortress of Solitude and figures and gets, I believe it's his mother. Superman's mother is on the call this time instead of the father.
Mm-hmm.
So that happens. He ends up having a discussion with her and that, and end up figuring out a couple of here and there things and finding out Zod is going to be coming around in the near future. Someone unlocks him from the prison. And meanwhile, this is all happening. Lois and Clark are doing the whole thing. Lois drops the S-bomb on Clark. Clark's like, what are you talking about? So to find out if he's Superman or not, fucking, she jumps into the water, into the falls, right into the river, into the falls.
Into the rapids,
The rapids and everything. And Clark is like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do? He ends up running at her, screaming Lois, and this laser beams the hell out of a tree to save her and shit. They end up saving her and getting out of the water without becoming Superman. And then they take her, they get her back to the hotel so she can get dry and warmed up and everything. And they end up figuring out, she ends up figuring out it's definitely, he's fucking Superman.
Yeah.
Definitely finds that out because he falls into the fire pit.
Mm-hmm.
And all that junk. So they end up doing that. So Clark ends up taking to the Fortress of Solitude, showing him what his place is and all that crap. He ends up giving up his powers to Lois because he wants to live a happy life with her as a normal human being. And gets his ass kicked in a diner. How sad is that? Then he ends up going, after getting his ass kicked, he decides to change his mind. He ends up going back to the Fortress of Solitude.
Because he finds out that General Zod has taken over America. Hijacked the headquarters of the White House. Well, that's important.
I know. Zod took over the White House. So he ends up doing that after seeing that on the old tube TV, hikes back to his fortress, ends up getting his powers back, and going back to Metropolis, sets up a new, their lives again as news people, news writers. And Zod comes. And, technically, Lex Luthor shows up at the White House and has a discussion with Zod, and they come to an agreement. They end up going to Metropolis. Zod kicks everyone's ass at the freaking Daily Planet, kidnaps Lois, kicks Superman's ass and steals Lois Lane, goes back to the Fortress of Solitude, where Superman ended up flying to after his ass got kicked. And they have a whole damn problem with this, having another kind of a fight about it. Superman ends up pretending to give up his powers, takes away their powers by rigging the Fortress of Solitude little power-sucking machine you suck outside, not inside. So, and Superman ends up defeating Zod and his people. And they end up at the end of the day, Superman saves the day by doing that and leaving Lex Luthor at the Fortress of Solitude. And then takes Lois home. And then, they go to the Daily Bugle. Not Daily Bugle.
Planet.
Daily Planet. I know a bunch of Superman fans will hate me. Daily Planet. Okay. And where they're still kind of have a thing going on. And then Superman just does his, like, kiss thing. And, like, she forgets her mind, and like, what happened. And just, she faints and shit. And just like, okay, cool.
Oh my god, I could have.
That was a really good synopsis.
Yeah, I like that.
My good synopsis.
No, that was actually.
What were you going to do?
That was better than I could do.
You explained the whole movie, which was pretty interesting. Yeah. Matt basically plotted the whole movie. So Superman 2. I know Matt did a lot of talking.
He's going to help you guys understand it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Well, Matt, I have another question for you. Since this is your first time seeing the Superman sequels.
Both of them.
So what did you think of this one? What did you think of Superman 2? Just get your general thoughts, and then we could go into the, like, which one you kind of prefer, whatever, later on.
Okay, so, like, literally the original one, I think it was more goofier than than the first one was. It just felt like, it didn't feel like it was, like, the same. With sequels, I'm hoping for it not to have the same formula, but have a little bit of, like, a strand of the original.
It still has the heart of it, of the original source, movie.
Yeah, like, so this one just felt like, okay, there's a strand there, but, like, it was a small strand to me. I felt more goofy and all that stuff than I wanted it to be for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I still liked it, but it wasn't, like, up to par to the first one.
No, the first one, it's just generally... I'm going to speak at least for myself. The first one is definitely the superior movie out of all the Superman films. I think it's the best, well-rounded, well-done, well-executed. With the theatrical version that we got, Dick Donner, he was fired. He was simultaneously filming Superman 1 and Superman 2 at the same time. He filmed 75% of Superman 2, and then they were going over budget, over schedule, so they decided to focus solely on the first movie and just get that done, and then, figure out the kinks with the second one later. So Superman 1 gets released, it becomes a huge success, then they fire Richard Donner right after it becomes a success, and then they replace Richard Donner with Richard Lester, who is the director. He's done, I guess, other movies with the Salkinds, like The Three Musketeers. Salkinds are the producers of the Superman films who made pretty stupid decisions. And he's also known for directing all the Beatles live-action movies. So I would not... That would not be my first choice of director. would be the guy who made those weird Beatles movies. And, the Beatles and Superman are two of my favorite things, but, like, they
don't collide together.
No, not too well, so JT,
I want to see that for the comic.
So JT, I know, a little bit of the behind the scenes. I know you only watched the Richard Donner cut right. I mean, obviously you've seen both of them.
I've seen the original theatrical release of number two, Superman 2, a bunch of times. But I just recently watched the Richard Donner cut today. And the thing to me is the biggest thing that's missing from the original theatrical release is Marlon Brando versus
that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, versus the Richard Donner cut. It kind of like ties in the first one to the second one a little bit more, and it makes it more coherent, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I 100% agree. Because like Matt was saying before, it's mostly with his mother. He's interacting with his mother. And there's this whole scene, kind of fast forward a little bit in the movie, where Superman, you know, he gives up his powers and he hitchhikes back up to the Fortress of Solitude. He's like making his way back to the fortress because he's depowered. He has no way of combating three supervillains with with these Kryptonian powers, let alone, one, or let alone three, So he hitchhikes back and then he tries to regain his powers. He's crying out to his father during that scene, So like during that scene, you're like, okay, well, where is he? Where's Marlon Brando? Where's his dad? He's crying out, father. Then it cuts to Metropolis. They're wreaking havoc. Zod and his cronies are just wreaking havoc throughout the city of Metropolis, trying to lure Superman into the Daily Planet, because Lex Luthor knows that if they have Lois Lane, that they would Superman's going to be drawn to her. And he just shows up and appears, and he has his powers. And you kind of, as an audience member, are just like hanging back, like, huh, what happened? How do you get his powers? You almost have to connect the dots and write your own conclusion in your head. And in the Richard Donner cut, you actually get the answer that Marlon Brando, Jor-El, has to sacrifice the energy field that he's producing within the Fortress of Solitude and basically sacrifice himself so Superman can become Superman again, can become powered up, have his powers again.
Yeah, he was kind of like regretting that in the cut, though. He's like, there's no other way of getting him back, but then he just disappears and he comes back, and well, there is a way. And it's like, then he gives him his powers.
Yeah, he warns him the whole time not to give up his powers. And he's
Kal-El, think.
Yeah, think Kal-El. That. Yeah,
he's thinking Kal-El, with the wrong brain.
Yeah, the wrong head.
Yep.
And I gotta say, we're gonna be jumping back and forth between the two cuts. With the Richard Donner cut, I like how instantaneously, like, Lois Lane kind of figures out, oh wait, Clark Kent is Superman. Like, basically, the first scene you see her in the Daily Planet, they're kind of like talking. She's actually sitting at her desk and she sees a picture of Superman with his arms crossed like this. Clark Kent is doing the same mannerisms, just unsubconsciously, just like listening to Jimmy Olsen with his arms crossed. And then she kind of gets the connection, like, oh, Clark Kent's never around when Superman is. And she literally gets a Sharpie and draws out Clark Kent's suit over Superman. And she's like, oh, well, this is you. You're the same person. And with all the time that you spend with the theatrical cut, it takes a very long time for Lois Lane to even get to that conclusion. Like you were saying, Matt.
Right, they just do it from the get-go.
Yeah, they just start out. There's a lot of fat to the theatrical cut that is not necessary. That with the Richard Donner cut, they just get straight to the point. Like with the version that we got in theaters, with Superman has to go to Paris. There's a terrorist attack. There's the Eiffel Tower. There's a bomb on the elevator of the Eiffel Tower. Lois is there. Superman has to save Lois and the bomb and the Eiffel Tower. And then he flings the bomb in the freaking elevator into space. And then that's when it collides into the Phantom Zone crystal with Zod and his gang. And then that's how they're released. But in the Richard Donner cut, it showcases the events of the first movie, Superman going to California, taking the rocket, the missile that's about to decimate the whole coastline. When he throws that, so it actually connects the movies a lot more coherently, like JT was saying. And the missile is the reason why they're released, because he throws that into space and then it's just a explosion. So either way, there's an explosion in space, and it's just, you know, with all that unnecessary padding with Paris, it was just a set piece that really didn't need to be there. It was charming to see Clark, you know, Superman, you know, oh, I believe this is your floor. You know, I like that. You know, I love Clark, Christopher Reeve, you know, just like more of him was great. It's just not really a necessary scene, you know. It just got straight to the point with the other version.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, in the scope of things, like, going to Paris didn't really fit in with the scheme of...
Doesn't really add anything.
Of the two movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't add anything.
No, it didn't. I agree with you guys with the director's cut edition, because it just jumped right to the point. I liked how she actually ran into the office with him. When it was just supposed to be just Clark and with the boss, and she's just like, "Oh yeah, yeah," and like, "Oh, the boss," he's like, "Yeah, Superman," just bullshitting around with him.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah, like him. Elbowing him.
And then he's just like, then the boss is like, "Oh wait, why don't both of you guys go to Niagara Falls?
Yeah,
it's just one of you. Yeah. Both of you go."
There's so at
the
least
boss actually sets it up.
Yeah, Clark doesn't want to go.
There's a setup for that he's going to Niagara Falls in that cut. In the other one, they just go to Niagara Falls and they're like, oh, we kind of
I think it's funny how Clark doesn't want to go because, in the theater cut,
he just says, like, the boss is like, oh, Lois is going, you should go too.
Yeah,
like, I think it does that.
Yeah, in the Richard Donner cut, he's like, I don't want to go. And Lois is like, come on, Clark, come on, let's go.
Yeah, let's go, buddy.
I think he's resisting to go because Lois Lane is like on his scheme, you know.
She knows that she's hip to him.
See, he wants to, like, an arm's length away from this whole situation. He doesn't want to be, because she'll obviously find out, like, if they go together, she'll be able to interrogate him one on one instead of, you know, with this safe space in the Daily Planet. And I know, Jay, you really wanted to talk about this scene where Lois Lane jumps out of the window, where
that was fucking
that was hilarious, and it wasn't as bad as I thought, as I originally
remembered, she's like
Superman, you're not gonna let me die if I jump out of the window. And then she jumps out of the window. This is a Richard Donner cut. And he races down to the first floor on the outside on the sidewalk and, like, blows, you know, does his super blind or whatever.
Cool. The super breath, yeah. Like,
super breath, thank you. That sounds better than what I just said.
Slides down like a feather, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And then she jumps into, like, a fruit container or whatever.
Well, it bounces off of a sidewalk, like, over, like, it's like a tarp. Like a roof, like a tarp.
Oh, yeah, a tarp. Out.
Like a thing that then she bounces, like, in a cartoon onto the thing.
Yeah. But,
like, yeah, that was pretty funny, actually.
Yeah, I think.
And then,
the tone of the movie.
And then you get Lois, what have you done, from, like, four floors up?
Yeah.
Which is
that's Clark, like, classic Clark.
I get Clark standing.
Yeah, that is classic.
Josh was telling me it's Clark standing.
It's not Christopher Reeve. It's not Christopher Reeve for that shot, but you wouldn't be able to tell. It's just a quick shot. Same. Yeah. Because the story behind the Richard Donner cut is that they released this in 2006. Christopher Reeve passed on 2 years prior to that in 2004. So they had 75% of the movie. They had to fill the gaps in, the 25% gaps with, you know, CGI at the time and whatever special effects and whatever they could kind of fill in. And maybe test screen footage, for a prime example. And maybe some bits and pieces from the Richard Lester
version. Yeah, I definitely noticed that.
Some stuff.
Like, especially Niagara Falls, I noticed.
Yeah, but I don't know how – I don't know what he shot and what – versus Richard Lester shot, you know, with some of the stuff. I know Richard Donner's cut, the majority is Richard Donner, but I know they had to fill in gaps with whatever they had. to have a complete movie. So yeah, so Richard Lester directed Superman 2, 3. I don't know if he directed 4. Did he do 4?
I don't know who did 4.
4 is its own other animal.
Man, I know Christopher Reeve for 4.
I saw the trailer. I saw the trailer for it. I saw it. That's fucking fucked.
So
Matt, fucking trailer. It is trailer fucked. Fucked.
It's so fucked that it's great. That's how great. That's the movie. I wanted to ask you.
I'm not talk about. We're on two right
I saw that movie when I was a kid, and I didn't know that it was fucked. I just thought it was a Superman
you're a kid.
Movie.
Yeah, that's you're it. You're amazing. Thinking Superman.
No, when you're a kid. Yeah. No.
These movies are projected towards kids, so they're not going to be a perfect, amazing story.
Yeah, especially for that time. I mean, I wanted to ask you, Matt. So, okay, so you saw both versions back to back.
Yeah.
Which version do you think is the superior version?
Superior?
Like, which one would you Which one would you go back to? You would go back to Richard Donner cut.
Yeah, I like the Richard Donner's cut better.
Why do you like that one better?
Because it's more straight to the point. There's no like weird like transitions with things that's happening. They give you more explaining than the original theater cut did. It's a lot more. There's a lot more like the Zod stuff is a lot better to me than it was in theater. Like you saw him being more brutal and
he's
evil.
A lot more menacing.
And as much as I hate snakes, I don't have to see the snake burning and twitching when it's on fire.
That was almost
scene. That's so stupid.
That was really quick. Yeah.
I like the Lois and Clark dynamics that was happening. And how Lois was figuring everything out and putting every puzzle piece together throughout the movie and until like the part when they actually get together. I love the part when Lois shoots him with the cap gun.
Oh yeah,
that's one of my favorite parts. Shoots him and he just thinks he actually got shot and it ricocheted off.
Yeah,
and he automatically knows like. I'm fucked now. You got to take out the glasses, and all that crap.
I think it's funny that
works a lot better.
It's so much better, even with not being completed. Can you just imagine, like, how much better it would have been
if
it was
did
completed.
The whole movie? Yeah,
yeah, the whole thing done, fleshed out.
It would be way, way much better. But he was juggling two movies at once. I can see what's happening here. And where they wanted to get him, just get rid of him. But they're stupid of getting rid of him because the thing is, like, him trying to shoot both movies at the same time shows that, like, he's determined to make this franchise work.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to see it grow. That's kind of bullshit.
Everything that could have happened wrong with behind the scenes kind of happened with the Superman franchise, at least the first two simultaneously filming those. But yeah, it's
like
pretty crazy
just,
what he went through.
They just went over schedule over budget. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, they went over schedule over budget. I know there's pushback from the Soul Kinds. They spent millions of dollars just for fucking one actor. They paid
which actor?
Marlon Brando.
They paid Marlon Brando $3 million for like less than 20 minutes of screen time for both movies. The reason why he didn't show up in the second movie is because they would have to pay him more if he actually showed up in the film. So they decided, let's save some money and let's get his mom to do all the talking, even though it doesn't really make any sense when he's crying out father and you don't see him having that conversation with his father.
You never saw his mother before ever, and then she shows up in the second movie.
When they launch him,
I don't know. It's kind of weird.
When they launch him away,
you see his mom in the first movie.
See her in the first movie.
Yeah,
is that the same actor, by the way?
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same lady.
Okay,
same lady.
At least that makes sense.
That's another thing I liked about this one. Like the father is actually present, instead of just the mom talking. Nothing against his mom, but like it's always been his mom. Not been his dad the whole time in the comic.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So, like, it's never been – I've never seen a special feature. Here's your mother. I can't talk to you today, son.
I wish it was a little more equilibrium with both of the parents, but there's definitely way more of a connection with Jor-El. I mean, if you have Marlon Brando, though, the greatest actor of the time or maybe of all time, you definitely want to utilize him as the most as possible. So it's funny that they spent all this money on him and all the footage that they had, they didn't even use, like, they used like half of it. They're like, okay.
Yeah, really. I think Dick Donner, he said, like, when we got Marlon Brando to do the movie, it was like getting God to be Jor-El.
Yeah, it wasn't
he's like the biggest actor you could get.
It wasn't Richard Donner. It was one of the Salkinds who did it, the younger one, Alexander Salkind.
He
said that.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. I just remember that. Yeah. Yeah. But it's pretty funny when you kind of compare it to. I've seen these back to back, and you know, I think if I was going to recommend this to just a regular, you know, person, like which movie to watch, I would probably recommend them the theatrical cut, just because it seems more like a complete movie. The Richard Donner cut, I like what they're going for more. You know, I like how Jor-El is actually a part of the story, and there's consequence for Superman giving up his powers. He loses the Fortress of Solitude. And at the end of the film, Lois Lane, her bawling her eyes out, basically saying, oh, you sacrificed your powers for me, and now you have your powers back, so this can't work anymore. There's more of a dynamic, like more drama in that case, where she's going to see this guy every day and know that she can't be with him. In the theatrical cut, it's just like, oh, he got his powers back. You don't really know how, and there's not really as much of a stake. You know, you just gotta accept that they can't be together. But with the one where you could see how much sacrifice was made for Superman to become Superman again, you understand why they can't be together in that circumstance.
I understand what you're saying, and that creates more drama or something.
It's a lot more drama.
More sadness.
Yeah.
That she can't be with him.
Yeah,
a lot more stakes. She knows she can't.
Mm-hmm. And so originally, like I was saying before, I would recommend if I was just going to say which one to watch, I would say the theatrical one, because it seems like more of a complete movie. This Richard Donner cut, I like the ideas that they're doing more. But it's kind of they had effects from 2006. They don't look that great, you know, and it kind of clashes with, you know, the 70s filmmaking style. I think I would definitely watch. I would choose to watch it over the theatrical one. It's kind of hard to say because they're both pretty good. I think all the best parts are definitely filmed by Richard Donner, and you could tell with Dick Lester, like, he wanted to do more jokes, like more slapstick, like the fucking guy on roller skates when they're, you know, when they have that big windstorm from the three Kryptonians, like blowing down the wind tunnel.
Yeah.
He's like, there's this stupid guy with roller skates and this guy's talking on a phone when the phone booth's knocked down. And like, but like in this one, it's like shit is blowing up. Cars are flying everywhere. You know, it's all practical. Yep. You can see everything going on. They're like more menacing. You know, they have more of a presence. It's not like that they're there for just like a joke. The muscle of the group, you know, he's not just like a bumbling idiot. You know, he's more threatening. I mean, they're all more threatening.
Yeah.
And you could see that like how much damage they're actually causing to Metropolis.
Like, I'm going to say this, when we're talking about how, like, we're talking about how Zaw and his group are, like, destructive. Right now, I'm going to tell you this, guys. While we're prepping up for the podcast, I put the damn video on. I never stopped watching the video. I'm at the White House part. There's a part when I don't recall in the theater edition,
Yeah.
That this guy comes through, like, a wall, like, a window through the wall, like, a wall of the White House of an M16. Zaw sees that and grabs the gun, throws the guy through the window, and just like starts shooting. His face has a smile and everything, knowing he's doing horrible things and he's enjoying it.
He loves killing people.
He loves killing. I'm like, that's why I want to see in a villain more. That you know is supposed to be destroying and ruining life. But that's a sad thing for me to say, but that's why I want to see
you want a love hate relationship with your villain of your franchise. You want to hate the villain, but you want them to be charismatic. And Terrence Stamp is very charismatic as General Zod. Like, kneel before Zod. It's you know, every line he has, it's great. You know, like, it's it's perfect for that time and for what he's going for. And that fight during Metropolis, there's like some action set pieces that I'm surprised that they even use for the theatrical cut. Like, there's one part where Superman fucking throws Nan through one of the buildings, and he's going through like, I don't know, like a couple.
Oh, is that when he punches him through the sewer? Right?
They go down in the sewer. And he goes through the Daily Planet. Like he goes through like a bunch of like, I don't know, like a couple floors of this skyscraper. He gets launched out. And it's like there's a lot more action, I would say, with that version. And the other one's kind of played more for laughs, you know. It's more slapsticky.
While we're talking about the Zod group, the one thing is, I enjoy actually this way of how they're doing it than actually Zack Snyder's way.
All right, yeah, continue. I mean, I agree with you.
I didn't want to bring it in, but like, just seeing like them like in that one, they bring in spaceships and things is wrecking the city. Mm-hmm. I rather like this is proper for me to see just three Kryptonians come to Earth. And just like after getting unlocked from prison they were stuck in, and just trying to figure out what the fuck's happening, and then try to take it over with their own like newfound powers. Instead of like, yeah, we knew we had these powers. Why do you think we have these mech suits too? Blah blah blah. We don't need anything. What we just have all this crap. I like these more. This fight scenes with these guys are more subtle.
That's the biggest thing.
And they're subtle. They don't look like they have to do that much. They know they can destroy a building by a flick of the finger, but they're just doing everything, so it's just
they don't need to. Right. It's so easy. It's so easy for them that anything that combat them that would be human, you know, man made is like nothing. It's like a toothpick, you know.
It's just
snapping a toothpick.
It feels right with this movie with them. The only thing I wish they weren't pale in the face.
I don't know. They're evil.
I wish they had some color, but
they're evil. Kryptonians are technically not able to tan because they because I don't know, their skin's not affected by sun rays as our skin is.
And Christopher Reeves needs to figure that shit out unless it's a suntan.
He doesn't have that much. He has color to the face, but he doesn't really have a tan per se. I know what.
Well, he has more color to the face than these guys do.
Definitely. Tom Welling's Superman. Not Superman. Tom Welling's Clark Kent. He wasn't allowed to tan throughout the whole series. So like that's why he's always just like he can't tan. He couldn't suntan throughout it. I thought that was kind of a fun fact, you know. Superman can't tan. He's
out in the sun all the time.
Yeah, exactly. But no, I definitely agree with you on that notion. I think with my problem with Zack Snyder's Justice League, Zack Snyder anything, it's just, especially with the new Justice League, like the action was cool, you know, there's a lot going on. Mm-hmm. But there's almost too much going on, and it's just like I can't comprehend what the fuck's going on at points. And then like it's all CG. It doesn't look real. It's all fake. With all this
stuff,
it's
like a Michael Bay movie.
Yeah, it basically is. With all this stuff,
they're basically brothers in a way.
Yeah, they're brothers.
But with fight scenes and everything, they're like brothers.
But everything's practical. All the destruction, like when they're bursting through the Daily Planet walls, are fucking little flying everywhere, debris going around. They're flinging cars across the street. You know, cars are blowing up. Helicopters are falling down. There's actually, you know, there's a physical, tangible thing that's happening on screen that I could connect with because it's actually happening. Something actually blew up. Something actually, you know, was destroyed. With this CGI madness, it just looks like a video game. The Justice League looked like a video game.
Like I explained it. It was like this game that me and Robbie actually enjoyed. It's Gears of War. Extra shit added to it. That's it. With that movie. But back to this and talk back to this the Superman 2 movies. With the part when they're fighting in Metropolis at night, when they have to pick up the bus. I liked in the director's cut, they scraped away the, hey, pick up the other end. I don't need you telling the other guy to pick up the end. I like
they just do it. They're unison.
And just got rid of it.
Yeah, they're just unison. Like I said, there's a lot of padding in the theatrical cut that's unneeded. And Richard Donner, they just get right to the point. It's just they just shave all the edges. And it's the behind the scenes of these movies is as interesting as the movie themselves, just like what was going on behind the scenes. I definitely recommend seeing what was happening behind the scenes. It's pretty interesting. So, Jay, I know you watched the Richard Donner cut. I know it's been a while since you've seen it prior. What are new reflections that you have on like a fresh rewatch? Matt, where the fuck are you going? we're still recording here.
We're still here. All right. Getting a beer.
Okay. I'm like, oh, I'm fine. I don't have to talk. I'm going to leave.
You know what I noticed is that the scenes between Kal-El, Superman, and Jor-El, they seem to be the most emotional to me, especially like when Marlon Brando or Jor-El gave up his life to
sacrifice himself twice for Superman.
Yeah. Gives him his essence up to make Superman Superman again. I don't know. That was very emotional for me watching it. Yeah.
No, I don't really have anything to add. Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think the stuff with Jor-El was the most emotional, the gut-wrenching, that got pulled the heartstrings. And the stuff with Lois Lane and Clark Kent, you know, especially when she has to figure out, you know, she realizes that she has to see this person throughout, you know, throughout work and just pretend like everything's fine, you know. And she doesn't really have to explain that. You could just tell by her emotions, how she's crying on the, you know, her back patio, that there's a lot of conflicting emotions going on there. And the reason with the end of the Richard Donner cut that he reverses time again, that was the original ending for Superman 2. Since they're filming Superman 1 and 2 simultaneously, they're like, all right, we need a big ending for the first movie. What do we do? Okay, let's use the ending from the second one and put it here and figure out the ending for the second film later on.
Okay.
Oh, wait, I'm fired. I can't figure that out. And then so Richard Donner gets fired, and then they get the Beatles director, Richard Lester. They're both Richard. It's a little confusing. But Lester to, kind of figure out what the ending was. And then in that version, he gives them the Superman mind memory kiss that erases all her memories of the past couple days.
I have a question. Does Superman even have that power?
In this, he does. In Superman 2. A lot of these movies, they just make up powers. They just make shit up. Fucking in Superman 4, he has Gumby fucking building powers with his eyes. He has Gumby powers.
Right. I noticed General Zod in the director's cut made a guy fly. Like, he lifted him up just by looking at him, basically.
Oh, no, he did the beam. No, he did like a beam thing.
Yeah,
oh,
it was like,
he does the beam with the finger. The
theatrical,
yeah.
Right? That's in the original, in the theatrical cut, right? That he does that?
Oh, I think it might be.
I think it may be in both.
I think it's in both.
I think it is in both. I kind of, I with General Zod having different powers in Superman, I kind of like that. Like, maybe, like, he kind of figured out how to utilize different abilities other that Superman wouldn't really pick up or figure out on his, like, himself. You know, I almost see it as, like, you know, humans have different abilities, different strength. So, like, if Kryptonians had, you know, were real, I think they would have different abilities. And I kind of like that. I like how they're, like, different in some ways, you know. And the ending with the Fortress of Solitude are very different. You know, they have that whole combat scene in Metropolis, and then they follow Superman to the Fortress of Solitude because Lex Luthor knows his address, because prior he went to the Fortress of Solitude finding out all this information. In the theatrical cut, they have a little combat, and then Superman throws his S at Non, and
it looks like a fruit roll up freaking wrap.
It looks like a fruit roll up. Yeah. And in the other one, they don't fight at all. It's just like, all right, they're at a standstill. It's almost like a mental, like, chess game at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a chess game in both films because Superman does something pretty clever to depower the other Kryptonians into, you know, basically submission. You know, he outsmarted them, which was fun, you know. It wasn't like Man of Steel when they're just punching the shit out of each other's faces and then they're just smashing through all the buildings through Metropolis and then the whole – all Metropolis just blows up. And, like, Superman actually cares about people. You see Superman saving people throughout this film. He's saving the bus. He's saving – you know, like, he actually cares about what's going on to the humanity. And Man of Steel, he doesn't give a fuck. He's just blown. No. Everything blows up, and it's like my senses all around are just getting, like, oversaturated. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't watch this anymore. It's too much. Too much is going on. You know, and in this version, he actually cares, and we need to see that with Superman. Like, there needs to be that direct connection that he
– the humanity. The humanity of the alien.
Right. Well, he's more human than alien because he was raised by humans, you know, which is almost forgotten in a lot of storytellers who tell Superman, especially recent years. I think it's a lot of the heart is missing.
It is missing a lot because another thing I want to throw in, because we're now in the Fortress fight scene. I liked how when they lost their powers, Zod thought he still had his powers and Superman shakes his hand and then he starts squeezing like he's breaking it.
Yeah.
Realizes his shit. Right. He ends up throwing him and he ends up falling into one of the crevices in the fortress. And then later on, the other ones will follow.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. I'm like, okay. And he just ends up dying in that way. I'm like, yeah, it's kind of a crap death, but it's better than what Zack Snyder did with the Man of Steel, with Superman having to kill somebody with his own bare hands. Properly like that.
That's my least.
I don't want Superman to kill unless he's really like.
And then he really has to. I mean, he kind of had to at that situation.
He had to that
I feel like he had to in that moment. Though.
Yeah, I don't know why
they had the right.
That's my least controversial part moment of that whole film. Like him killing Zod in Man of Steel. I didn't have a problem with it. It was just like his lack of emotion and caring about humanity when he was crushing through Metropolis. That's what I really, you know, had a bad taste for. And then he suddenly cares about these four people who are about to get laser-eyed. I mean, you murdered all these thousands of people throughout these skyscrapers. Why do you care about this family all of a sudden, you know? And then
That's why I was.
Well, I don't want to talk about these movies. We're talking about Chris.
I know, but I'm just saying. But no, but I liked how that went. Like I liked how that went in the movie. But at the end, they end up blowing up the fucking Fortress Solitude of the director's cut.
Yeah.
I don't remember it being in the theater cut being blown up. So with that one, with if you to do that, the movie series will follow the one. I mean, like they did two afterwards. So that means Zod and the group are kind of probably alive.
Back, well, if trapped, if so, probably. So hypothetically, if Richard Donner continued Superman 2, he wouldn't have done that ending where he reverses time again. He would have done something else.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
Yeah. So who knows what he would have done? I would be. I don't know. I wish I could freaking fly around the world and change the fucking movies and just keep Richard Donner in the helm of all the Superman films. You know. I think
you know that song by Cher, "If I Could Turn Back Time," that was based off the first Superman movie.
Yeah, yeah, she sang that. For so I don't know. So Jay, do you have anything that like stands out to you? Any scenes that you want to like talk about?
Nothing in particular. I don't know. It's just, again, I go back to the Marlon Brando thing, like making it more coherent between the two films.
More connected with the, with the first film. So Matt, what else? Before we get into ratings of, you know, the movies, what are your thoughts on Superman the movie, the first movie? Because I never really asked you this question before. And I know we'll do it in a future podcast.
It's been a while since I watched it, too.
You saw it in the theaters.
Maybe saw it in the theaters.
That wasn't that recently. Long ago. I mean, that was like a year or two ago, like years ago.
So, like, the thing is, like, I like the first one I really liked a lot. Every scene wasn't, like, didn't feel slow or like drawn on too much. It was nice seeing the build up from like Clark Kent going from Smallville to Metropolis settings.
It's a natural transition.
Then seeing the transition to that, then seeing him becoming the new guy in the news group, in the news writing group, and seeing him just run around and do bullshit, and then figuring out his like way of dealing with his powers of like saving people and stuff, and Lois, and figuring out that he actually likes Lois a lot. But no, actually, like that was like that's like I said, like these three movies that we're talking about, even if you want to count Snyder, but that before, I do like the first one on better than all of them.
Yeah, the first one's definitely the most well-rounded out of all the films. Like we said before. The Richard Donner cut, you know, had to be kind of melded together. You know, it wasn't a complete film. And I know we were discussing before, you were discussing, Matt, how you liked the reveal of how Lois Lane grabbed, like, basically a gun and used a blank on Superman.
Yeah.
That was a screen test. That wasn't even a real actual scene. That wasn't, really? Like, a final scene that they shot. That was just a screen test, just, like, seeing how the lighting would work and how the interactions would be. So you could kind of tell with some of the mannerisms that they don't fully have their characters totally adapted. This was, like, in the process of just, like, you know, they got them hired. They're trying to just see how the makeup looked, how the lighting looked, you know, how the interaction was. It was just a screen test, just trying to figure it out. So that's why in between shots, his hair would change, his glasses would change, and how the set just looks. It doesn't look very elegant. It's just a basic room, you know. In the theatrical cut, you know, it's just, you know, it looks like a very in-depth room. There's, like, beds over here. There's a fucking polar bear skin, you know. There's a lot going on in the room. And the reveal
could be like a romantic hotel
room. Yeah. Right, because they had the ability.
They had the honeymoon suite.
Yeah, it was a honeymoon suite, which what they probably would have shot if with the Richard Donner version, it would have been probably the same set. But they didn't get that chance because they didn't shoot that scene, so they just used a screen test to kind of fill in the pieces there. And the reveal of Superman in the theatrical cut, I think it's kind of stupid how he reveals it to Lois Lane, because he kind of just trips in the fire and he's like, oh, my hand is, don't look at it. And then he shows his hand.
It's on fire. Don't look at me.
Don't look at
me. Meanwhile, she's pulling his hand out of his sleeve with ease. And he looks at him like, oh.
Yeah, it's fine. And just because
he's not burnt, she's like, you're Superman. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Even like if a regular person fell in a fire pit, if their hand was in it for a fraction of a second, they wouldn't have burns on their hand. You know, your skin needs to be in contact with the flame for a certain amount of period of time for cause burns.
Right.
It was like instant. If you he do got hit out like, pretty recently.
Well, technically, if you do hit like a log, your hand will get burnt.
Yeah, it
scorched
a little bit.
It was, yeah, but like that's probably what she was kind of more looking for. I want to give Lois some help on this one with this theater cut with that.
No, I don't blame Lois at all. I think the whole thing is stupid because Superman tripping shouldn't even happen. Superman doesn't trip. Clark Kent trips if he's acting to trip. Unless you want to read into it like he tripped on purpose because he really subliminally wanted to show Lois Lane that he was Superman, you know, subconsciously wanted to tell her, so he tripped on purpose. Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. With this movie, you kind of have to, like, fill in the gaps, you know? Like, you have to almost write the movie behind the scenes in your head. Like, you're like, oh, he's crying out to his father. Oh, he has his powers. Okay, I guess they have Kryptonian technology in the Fortress of Solitude to give him powers again. Okay, I wrote it in my head. I fixed it, you know? And you got to connect a lot of the dots in the film. So that's why there's so many, you know, it's like you almost have to put on the layers of the film. And you understand why that some scenes are lacking in that fact, like with depth. But I think the theatrical cut seems a little more, and not really coherent, but it feels more complete as a film than the Richard Donner cut.
It doesn't have Lois, what have you done?
No. And that's fine. That didn't even bother me. I don't know why you kept bringing that up. That was like such a fine thing.
It's so out of the blue.
It works. I don't think it's.
It's a stupid thing Clark would probably say.
Yeah, he would say that. Yeah, exactly. Go like, oh, what are you doing?
Like, it's not him, and it's just.
Yeah, but it's fine. It's a wide shot. There's a close-up scene at the end of the movie. Not a close-up. It's like a mid shot where Lois Lane is typing on the keyboard, like telling the story, and then like time gets reversed. You know, Perry White's toothpaste gets sucked back into the tube. That wasn't Margaret Kidder. That was just some random stand-in. So, like, you know, if that works, then Lois.
But you don't notice it.
Way better. You don't notice that either. You're the one drawing attention to it.
Yeah.
It was such a shot, like for a couple seconds.
I enjoy that part when the toothpaste part, because the guy literally is smoking a cigar through all his house, and he's gonna brush his teeth.
I was like, is he gonna smoke a cigar and brush his teeth at the same time?
Clean it out, got it. What the fuck?
I was really expecting that. And also, I want to say, as another tidbit, Perry White was played by Jackie Cooper, who is one of the original Little Rascals, Power Gang. He plays Jackie. It's the gang before Spanky and Alfalfa. It was when it was still Our Gang before the Little Rascals.
Mm-hmm.
So you could see him as a little rascal, as a little kid. And they do have this – well, obviously, he has the same face. It's the same person. But you can tell that it's him when it's a little kid. It's pretty funny.
And another thing I want to bring up, I'm kind of disappointed with them leaving with Lex Luthor with hair mostly through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he has like the actor probably has real hair or whatever the hair they want to give him,
mm-hmm.
the hairstyle. Like, it's nice that they did it so they didn't have to keep ball capping him or make him clean shave the whole time. But like, it just like that doesn't feel Lex Luthor to me. Including I liked how they made him not really the main focus point of the movie too.
Yeah,
I agree. They didn't make him like, oh, We're going to throw Lex into this, but we're going to have him as a side character.
He definitely progressed the plot of the film, but he wasn't the main.
He's a helping hand. He's a helping hand. That's all he is. Mm-hmm. He wasn't plotting. He did plot. He had his little scheme in the Mets, but it wasn't like super heavy that it just changed everything in the movie was supposed to go with Zod and the group. Mm-hmm. One thing I did enjoy.
So yeah, so
a lot of movies don't do that, right?
Yeah, it's always Lex Luthor with his freaking land real
and estate. You know what I miss? You know what I really miss from this film? Was what? Otis. Otis is in the beginning. He's not in the rest of the movie.
Well, that would have been in either version. Yeah, I do miss Otis. Otis is great. One of my biggest regrets is never casting Matt as Otis. I think that would have been fantastic.
You would have been good as Otis.
You would have been a great.
I already had too many characters there in that, man.
Everyone. Otis is great.
We were everywhere, man.
I know.
That's the same guy from that part. That's the same guy from that. Yeah. That guy's the same guy with makeup.
Well, going back to your gripe about the wigs, what the hell is his name? Hackman. Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman didn't want to wear a bald cap throughout the film, so he's like, I want to keep my hair. That was with the first film. So they're like, all right, we'll compromise. We'll give you wigs throughout the film. So that's why his hair is always
changing. Well, at least the first film like established it. He has wigs.
Mm-hmm.
So he puts on a fucking wig.
And at the end of the first film, that he does reveal that he's bald. He has the bald cap. So that was the compromise there.
I should tell you guys, my earphones are about to, like, the battery's going to die. Very soon.
Perfect.
So if I disappear, you know why.
Okay, whatever.
Well, you won't disappear, but we won't.
You don't tell that, yeah.
Because you're on a laptop.
Yeah, you're fine. Anyway, so yeah, that's from the first movie, all that stuff with the wigs. There was something else I wanted to say, but I don't really recall. So, Matt, what are your final thoughts on Superman 2, the two versions?
Final thoughts, meaning which one I'll be, like, happier with and watching?
No, whatever you want to mention before, you know.
Final thoughts. I basically said everything I wanted to say about them. I kind of want to mention, I did like the part in the theater edition. Like, you get to see Zod and his group trying to figure out they have powers in a part, in like a way. And they realize they adapted, like, they're trying to learn how to do laser beams.
Mm-hmm.
It was pretty neat. Like, it was pretty nice seeing that, but, like, it was goofy at the same time. Like, I get it. You don't really need it. They just expect them to just automatically be like, yeah, we know we have powers. But in the director's cut, but like, it was kind of neat. And oh yeah, don't forget. Was it product placement? Marlboro Red cigarettes truck.
Yeah, they were in the movie. And you could see at the end credits like that
Coca-Cola. I remember that.
They don't. At the end of the movie, there was a credit that's saying they don't endorse tobacco use. At least they did with the Richard Donner cut. I don't know if they did with the theatrical one.
No.
But it said at the end of the film, we don't promote tobacco use.
Don't have it as a product placement in your movie then.
So, JT, final thoughts on Superman 2 and Superman to the other Superman.
You know, Superman 2 theatrical version makes more sense because obviously you don't have the screen test footage and you don't have stuff that looks out of place. But Dick Donner version is just more coherent. I say this is the third time I'm saying it. It's more coherent with the first one. It makes more sense overall, and you just get a sense that they had it planned out, you know, between the first one and the second one. So I wish they had completed the second one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I do agree. I wish Richard Donner had the helm throughout the rest of the movies. So Matt, what do you rate the, let's start with the theatrical cut and then go to the Richard Donner cut.
I would like to say I'll give the theater cut, I want to give it like a 7.5.
Oh, that's pretty high. Okay.
And then do that, and then for the director's cut, I really like it more. I want to give it at least an 8.
Wow.
It's
okay. Yeah.
I'm like going by like the time period where it is and the bullshit that happening.
Mm-hmm.
So like for the time period of where this movie would have landed, yeah, those would be the ratings. It wouldn't, nowadays movie would be like, what the fuck is this? But it wouldn't have a good presence in our time. But like at that time where it's supposed to belong, it's a great movie and well placed.
Yeah, well, I mean, movies are all time capsules, so they're gonna reflect on. Yeah. The time period they're made. Obviously, if this was made now, it would be like Man of Steel or something not good. So
yeah,
these are quality films. So JT, what are your ratings?
I give the theatrical version like a 7, and I give the Dick Donner cut like an 8.5.
Okay, so pretty similar. Pretty similar ratings.
Yeah.
I'd probably give it about the same. Mine's not really too drastically different from you guys. Yeah. So that was the Superman 2 discussion. Jay, are you dead? Are you gone?
I think I can hear you.
Okay. All right. So
I can hear you on my phone.
We'll do the rest of the episode. We're basically close out anyway. My ratings are pretty close to the same. Superman, the first movie, I'd probably give a 9 or 10. I mean, it's one of my favorite films of all time. Superman 2 is a very excellent sequel. You know, it feels it progresses the story and the characters how you want, and I think it's very progressive for the time. That they set up the three villains in the first movie. You know, no one was fucking doing that in 1978. You know, mm-hmm. they set up like they're like, oh yeah, we're gonna make this a franchise. No one fucking did that. They barely did that after 1978. You know,
I
want to say there's another thing I want to say before we close the episode, that these movies, at least the first two Superman, seem the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films seems very reflective of the Superman series. Like in the second Spider-Man loses his powers. Second Superman loses his powers. Both second films, their love interests find that Superman or Spider-Man. You know, they mm-hmm. find out the same similar things. They both give up their powers. You know, so I think Sam Raimi was definitely influenced by the Superman franchise, by the first two films. And even in the first movie, Aunt May says that to Peter Parker that he's not Superman, you know. And he does that Superman, Tobey Maguire in the first film, he does the Superman opening chest, you know, when he's running in the parade to reveal that the Spider-Man spider. So I think Sam Raimi was definitely influenced by these two films. And I want to say that they seem like they kind of hit the same kind of camp quality in tone. So
in Spider-Man the movie, like Spider-Man franchise, Spider-Man, they never really like overdid the like the movies either with action or like
They were trying to tell you this story,
but they had like subtle action. Like it wasn't overly done. It was properly.
You knew what the fuck was going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of it was like, practical.
It wasn't like ruined. It wasn't over like, just thrown around shit.
When
like,
stuff
even with
is...
the part with the, like in second one, Doc Ock, when they're actually at the end of the movie, when the thing's destroying itself, like when the ball, like the power of spear, whatever the hell it is, basically a sun. is being made and overgrowing, and they're trying to just take it down. The whole warehouse is coming in, but you know what's happening and what they have to do still. Even in the beginning, like in the beginning with Doc Ock, that when the tentacles go haywire, that does the same thing. Things are happening, but they're so subtle that you can tell what's going on.
Well, a lot of that was practical, too. A lot of that was practical, too. I mean, we'll save all that for a Spider-Man discussion. Yeah. We'll do that in the future. But I think there's a lot of similarities with the storytelling of the first two Supermans and this first two Spider-Man films.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to mostly Gravy, like it just has a more fitting feel than mostly anything else that they have, like that's around that coexists with them.
Yeah. Flow. When stuff is practically blowing up and cars are practically flying around, I actually, I take that in more so than a CGI fuck fest like Justice League or whatever. But yeah, that's our final thoughts on Superman 2. Please like, comment, and subscribe. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Backyard's Finest Pod for the next episodes. And I guess we'll do the outro. So this is Josh from Backyard Productions sending you off up, up, and away until next Backyard's Finest episode.
And this is Superman's pal, Matt, and
JT signing off.
Becoming super pals.
Oh, I didn't
know. What episode at a time? What episode at a time?
All right. Well, thanks, Matt. You saved the episode. All right. Jay, you want to say? You could just do.
What's that?
What?
Becoming super friends one episode at a time. You want to do your thing?
Becoming super friends one episode at a time.
Perfect. Okay. All right. Bye, everyone. We'll see you next episode. Bye. We'll probably do King Kong versus Godzilla, the new one. So yeah, look forward to that.
That's actually real. We screwed that one up. We forgot. We thought it was a week earlier.
Yeah.
But then next week
we decided to do the original Snyder.